Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
It is not Monday. It might feel like Monday. It might seem like Monday, but it's not Monday. Today is Tuesday. Most of us had Memorial Day off, and now we get to cram 5 days of work into 4 days. Does that work that way with the chief of police? By the way, Kyle Whitehead is here.
Good morning.
Yeah, do you have to cram 5 days of work into 4 days? That's how my
typically,
job
kind of is. Yeah, it's more like 6 days. I get a cram into, anyway, yeah. 5 days into 6 days.
Yeah, it's all right. Well, welcome, chief. Thank you for coming. Appreciate
it. Thanks for having me.
Good to see you. Kyle has now been chief of police for, 3 years?
We're just hit five.
5 years?
Yeah, March it was five. So March of 2020 is when I started in that role.
If you look back on the last 5 years, are there some things that have happened that you're like, I never thought that would happen while I was chief?
A lot of it started as I became chief. The whole COVID thing, I mean, I hate to pick that scab, but very unique.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. So. We're trying to forget it, Kyle.
Right? 5 years passed now. Hopefully we can move on.
No more masks, no more jabs, no more. I mean, my wife and I had bought a cruise for that summer, mm-hmm. Summer of COVID, and they had shut the cruise lines down for a long time. And they finally, right before ours was to come up, they opened them back up. But then they said, "Well, you have to have the certification and the vaccine and all this stuff, and you will be wearing a mask the whole time." It was an interesting time.
Yeah, we had we actually had a Hawaii trip booked for that same summer and had to cancel it. And just,
I think Hawaii was maybe the worst state in the country.
Yeah, seeing the restrictions, and we actually ended up canceling before they completely locked down because just you had to quarantine for a certain number of days.
Yeah.
Anyway, why are we talking about this?
I don't know. But that's when you became chief, though, was right then, huh?
Yeah, just a little, just as I was ramping up.
Wow. Well, I'm glad. Hopefully those days are behind us for good.
Yeah, I hope so. I think one pandemic in a lifetime is probably enough, right?
Yeah, for sure. I was doing the news earlier, and Brandon Hansen came in to do his show, and he said he listened to the news on the way in, and he said it didn't sound like St. George. The names I was giving were St. George names, but, you had the attempted murder. It happened this past weekend at a Chrysalis home. And I know you can't really talk a lot about ongoing cases, but and then you had a couple got pulled over in Tokerville. They had a juvenile in the back that they were, I don't know if they were trafficking or if she was willing or whatever, but that whole thing ended up where they're under arrest now and talking about turning this teenager into a prostitute and stuff. And it's just like, what is going on here?
Yeah, it's crazy. We're seeing some real crazy behavior. Those things that we had hoped we never would see in our community. Yeah. We had another one a few weeks ago. Well, maybe it's been more than that now. We had a couple of juveniles, younger kids, I think maybe like they were both younger than 13 or 12 siblings and two sisters, and they're hanging out at one of the elementary schools after dark, after hours, which, kind of begs the question, why are they even there? But anyway, they're on their cell phones. The younger sister, they're doing something. They get separated, and the younger sister turns around, and the next thing she knows, her older sister's gone and sees a van pulling away.
Oh, wow.
And we ended up finding the van, getting in a short pursuit, found the driver of the van was an adult. And there had been some communication between this young person and the adult. You can imagine what probably would have happened who knows? But fortunately, our officers were in the right place at the right time. Wow. We were able to prevent a real tragedy. And so, we got these things going on in our community, and it's hard to see sometimes. It's hard to understand. We want it to keep very small town feel, but we're starting to grow up, unfortunately.
If you've been here a long time, you're like, I want Mayberry. I don't want these crimes and things, but reality is that the bigger you get, the more, it's pure math, right? The more people you get, especially in a close space, the more likely there's going to be a bad seat or two. They're going to make some bad choices.
And as a police department, we work our hardest. We have great staff, and we are doing our absolute best to try and keep a handle on it. Mm. The other thing that we have going for us here is we have a supportive community. Our community is very supportive of the department. They, you know, they're our eyes and ears a lot of times.
Yeah.
We have supportive city staff. Our elected officials support the police. You know, you look around the country, some of these communities have this division amongst their elected officials, and some like the police, some don't like the police, and we've never experienced that here. We still have overwhelming support, and it's just, it's great. It's in fact, we're seeing a lot of officers come in to want to join our department from other states because of, you know, some
support.
They like the support. They like what St. George has to offer. I mean, it's a beautiful place, number one, but it's just still very family friendly.
Well, let's talk for a minute about dispatch and the role dispatch plays. Now, it technically 911 dispatch is under St. George Police Department, right?
Yes. So we have they call it a PSAP. We run the PSAP for the entire county.
Okay.
And that's all police, fire, and medical and 911 calls. Other than Hilldale, Colorado City, they have their own PSAP out there. But everybody else in Washington County is dispatched through us. And so, we take care of it. It's Highway Patrol, the county, all of the cities, and then
so someone in Leverkin will call 911. It will go to our dispatch right here.
Yes, it does.
And then they've got to decide who to call and who to get where, right?
Yeah, and we have protocols. They're very, like I said, I couldn't do the dispatch job. My hat's off to those dispatchers.
They're amazing,
it's a lot of stress, a lot to know, and it's very fast-paced. But they do such a great job day in and day out, and 24/7. They have to be there answering the phones, and, sometimes on a graveyard shift, it can be just dead quiet, and the next thing you know, you've got a real catastrophe
all
happening.
All heck breaks loose. Yeah,
so.
I had Annalie and Julie on from dispatch and a couple of veterans, and they were telling me kind of what you said, and it's not necessarily exciting news, but St. George is getting big, and with getting big gets some big crimes and some real
we have a very, very capable dispatch center, though, and they do so much to support all of our public safety, particularly our officers. You know, there's a lot of technology, a lot of research that they do.
Right.
I'll tell you, several of them could probably be very effective detectives because sometimes we'll get a description of a vehicle or a partial plate, and man, they'll go to work just trying to dig through and help us locate a suspect or possible suspects.
One thing that impressed me when they were on, and maybe you can address this a little bit with your entire department, the need to be trained and prepared, and I kind of was like, what if you don't know what to do? What if someone calls you don't know what to do? And they're like, well, here's the thing. We train so much and so often and so hard that so far, and then, I mean, we're talking Annalie, 22 years or something, she said, we don't usually come up upon scenarios where we haven't at least talked about it and trained for it and gotten ready for it. And that really, to me, that brings to light the fact that there's a lot of people, police officers, dispatchers, et cetera, that do a lot of prep for stuff that may never happen, and yet they're there and they're ready in case it does.
Yeah. The other good thing about dispatch is we have very specific protocols in place for whatever type of emergency may
have a baby, whatever.
and I think sometimes you have to realize in that type of a role, there's only so much you can do over the phone. And oftentimes the biggest part of it is being that calm, collective voice to kind of help people until the first responders can get there, you know, in the vehicles and can help with the situation.
I was fascinated with the idea that you guys have started, I guess, I don't forget what it's called, but the debriefing, the after, what happens after kind of the conclusion
the
of
critical,
things.
We call them critical incident stress debriefs.
Yeah, so I was fascinated in that in the old days, the dispatchers would kind of let they do what they could, and then they hand it over to the first responders, and then they would never hear another word. And, and you started including them now in the debrief in helping them to kind of close the book on
There's been a lot of studies done, and there is value in getting all of the first responders together and going through the scenario from start to finish.
Hmm.
That gives everybody closure, because sometimes, you know, for example, a police officer on scene, he may wonder, why on earth are they doing this, or why did that when we got on, you know, they gave us this information, but we get on scene and it's something very different.
Yeah.
And so it helps for, you know, to get everybody in the same room and debrief those, especially when it involves a very high stress critical incident where there may be some fallout from that.
We talked a little bit, you and I have talked about this in the past, but a lot of times first responders, and that includes the dispatchers, have their little box and they have to put their personal feelings aside and what they witnessed and put it in the little box. And unfortunately, some of them never open the box, but hopefully if you're going to be healthy about it psychologically, you can open the box later and deal with your feelings about these things. That's become a big thing now with first responders.
It has, and that's something that we've really tried to implement throughout our department with our dispatchers, our civilian staff, with our sworn staff, is that wellness, all the top to bottom wellness. So it used to be we did a good job at focusing on, you know, physical wellness, eating healthy, the whole thing. But recently we've really started to focus on the emotional side of things, because like you said, if you don't ever open that box and get those things resolved, and it doesn't mean you have to go to a counselor every time you experience stress. Sometimes just talking to somebody, having a conversation with a spouse or a family member. We have peer support officers in the department that are trained, and so if someone feels like something's bothering them and they don't necessarily think it rises to the level of going to a counselor, we have the peer support. We do require every year our police and dispatch employees have to have a mandatory visit with a counselor. And they don't have to talk about anything if they don't want, but we pay them to be there, and that's just the hope, is to get them in the door. Maybe there's something going on in their life, whether it's work related or in their personal life, that we can help just get that box opened up, get some things out, and then they're good.
Did you, when you were an everyday patrol officer, did you have that same thing? You kind of had to, okay, my feelings are over here. We're not going to deal with them right now. We're going to deal with the business at hand. And then later on, you had to deal with those?
Yeah. Unfortunately, a lot of police officers in decades past, we would go through those experiences, but then we just never would open the box in a healthy way. I mean, I can remember a couple of incidents I was involved in as a young police officer to this day. They still cause a lot of emotion when I talk about them, and it's hard. And so when you start trying to bring that out, and if you don't have someone to help you understand that that's okay, that's okay, that's a normal reaction to those types of situations, you hurry and close the box again, because you're like, man, why is all this emotion coming out? Right. And so that has happened. But hopefully we're turning a corner there.
Well, if you just think about, like, our top story today has been about kind of the follow up on that. Courtney Mansfield is her name, the lady who was stabbed by one of the clients at the Chrysalis home. If you're a first responder, you show up. Here's this lady. I don't know if she was unconscious at the time, but here's this lady who's been stabbed multiple times. She's covered in blood, and you have these police officers showing up trying to get to the bottom of what happened and save her life at the same time. Yeah, of course there's feelings. Of course you're going to be upset, and you're going to, if you see someone covered in blood, it ain't a movie. This is real blood, and of course you're going to be upset. So to have them respond to a scene like that and go, okay, business first. I got to take care of business first. Save this person's life. Find the person that did this, and then later on deal with them. And it's real.
And you're really dealing with two situations there. You've got the medical problem that officers often beat even the fire and medical there. And then you're trying to make sure that the area is secure as well. And we have a suspect outstanding. Who is that? Yeah. Are they going to jump out of the shadows at us? And so it can be very, very difficult sometimes to understand and to go, man, I want to help. But, especially in a pre-hospital setting, you see someone with a bunch of stab wounds, there's very limited things you can do, even when the ambulance gets there, until you can get into the hospital and start doing x-rays and finding where the problems are at. It's difficult.
And, we get these little packages of news at my level as a news guy. We get into the packages, and it's all kind of already wrapped up for us, and we can tell what happened. But like you said, the police officer comes in a situation like that. It was late at night. There was a woman with serious, life-threatening, almost deadly wounds, and then a suspect at large. And you just think, okay, how would I handle that? Because I know I wouldn't have handled that very well, but the police officers did.
And that's where you can see, and I guess kind of maybe switching gears a little bit, but sometimes you can see how when an officer has to use force, for example, an officer gets called to a situation, they jump into something not really knowing what they're getting into.
Yeah.
They do the best that they can trying to navigate and and resolve that situation. And so then oftentimes as the public, we get all the facts after a day or two, right. And then we start judging them based on, well, if it was me, I'd have done this.
But you didn't have those when you were...
Exactly. It'd be great if our officers had 10 or 15 minutes even to sit around and strategize and try and figure out how are we going to deal with this the best we can. And they do a great job at slowing things down, but sometimes it just requires action. And so I think we have to be a little careful, especially in the day of social media and all this information at our fingertips. Sometimes we're a little quick to judge the decisions that our police officers make.
So do you think, going back to the body cam thing, do you think body cam helps in these situations to help people realize the immediacy of what's going on? Or do you think it also is part of painting not necessarily a realistic picture?
I think it helps to some extent, but the other thing we've got to realize, and there's been a lot of studies done on this, you could have three people in a room observe the exact same situation, and they're all going to describe it differently.
Right.
A body cam may not accurately reflect what's going through the officer's mind and what the officer is perceiving, and understanding that even as human beings, we're going to make errors in our judgment. Our minds oftentimes create these images, and sometimes there's gaps, and we subconsciously fill these gaps in, and it's not that we're intentionally trying to be deceitful or we're trying to make things up, but that's just the way our minds work. And there's been a lot of studies through the American Psychological Association, and there's other groups that do a lot of these studies on high-risk incidents, critical incidents. The military's done studies on this, and so sometimes we find the body cam, although it is very objective in what it shows, it might not be completely what the officer said he saw or felt.
Right, right. Plus, you know, having watched some body cams lately of some different things that happened in parts of the country, you also don't get, even though you get a picture, it's not the eyes, it's not the brain. The camera is just one kind of image, 2D image of what's happening. And I was watching one body cam footage, and they were standing in a doorway. All you could see was what the camera could see through the doorway. Meanwhile, the officer could actually kind of see a little bit around the corner there and everything, and we had no idea that other stuff was going on. Yeah. So
a perfect example of this, if I can share, is just the other day I was watching a video where some officers arrived, and this person's in a car, and they're trying to flee, and they've got some police cars that they're showing up, and they're trying to box them in, right? Put their cars against theirs so the person can't get away. And as an officer's pulling in, the car's tires are spinning. It's front and back got the car's blocked, but this person's turning the wheels, and you can see their bumper, starting to slip. And so they're obviously going to get out. Well, the officer comes in, and he, from the camera's perspective, he actually hits the person. Well, then over the radio, he says, "Hey, dispatch, the suspect just hit me," right? And so, and it's not that the officer's intentionally making that up, but under that high stress, that's what he's perceiving, And,
right.
And that's where sometimes I think we get a little bit judgmental, and we've just got to be careful not to pass judgment and let the process work through, let those investigations work themselves out.
I'm curious, changing gears a little bit, but as a... You're a public official. Chief of police, right? Public official of a city that's now over 100,000 citizens. Is it easy living in the public spotlight? People recognize you, right, all the time when you're out in public and everything?
Yeah, they do. In fact, it's kind of a game. My kids, when we're out, my kids are always, they think it's kind of funny if we can get through a store without me being somebody saying hi or me saying hi to somebody.
Yeah,
it is. I get recognized quite a bit.
I'm guilty, too. I saw him at a pizza place not that long ago, and, hey, Kyle. But I wasn't trying to be a fanboy. We're just friends.
It's fine. I actually don't mind. I like the interaction, and I don't feel like I have anything to hide, and even if I'm off duty, I like to engage in conversation. And a lot of times, though, I'm really bad at names, or remember, and so it's like, hey, remind me, where do I know you from?
That's
like
actually engagement. a good strategy right there. Remind me again, because it's you're confessing. I don't remember your name, but that's okay, right?
Yeah.
The hard ones are ones where you really should have remembered their name, and you're like, oh, crap, I don't remember. And if I say this, I'm going to sound dumb. We've all been there, Kyle. I know what you're talking about. My dad, by the way, was a TV weatherman.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of played that game too. When I was growing up, my dad was on TV, and if we ever went out to a restaurant as a family, it was like, okay, how long is it going to take before someone comes up and talks to my dad because they saw him on TV?
Yeah, those types of people are just celebrities. There's a couple of them that live here locally, and I always see them, and it's like I get as excited to see them as I would any movie star.
Yeah, good point. Good point. I think, does Post Malone have a house here or not? Somebody keeps saying he does.
You know, one of my daughters told me again the other day that he does, but I have no idea.
Back in the day, it was Dr. J had a place here, right? And I guess he did. I don't know. I never went to it.
I don't keep track of that. Yeah. Maybe the county keeps those public records somewhere. Somebody could go search through them.
Now, how old am I? When I was a missionary in Philadelphia, Dr. J was still playing for the 76ers back then. Wow. That's how old I am. It was Dr. J and Moses Malone were their two big stars.
I remember Malone. Jay, I think I remember a little bit. I wasn't a huge sports fan, so I didn't follow along.
You're younger than me.
But I was kind of the Michael Jordan generation.
Yeah,
so.
That was a great generation. And John Stockton sending the Utah Jazz to the NBA.
All the Jazz.
Finals.
Yeah.
Ah, those were the days. All right, so... I think what I'll do is I'll get a break in here. I do want to ask you, this is something that happened outside your jurisdiction, so I figure we can maybe offer, get your opinion on it too. We also want to talk about the Spear Academy coming up and what that is and how much it costs. Hint, hint, it's free. We'll talk about that and more when we come back. We're on with Chief Kyle Whitehead, St. George City Police Department. We'll be right back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
All right, we're back. I'm Andy. He's Kyle, or Chief, if you want to call him. I think everybody that works there calls him Chief. You don't even have a first name anymore, do you?
No, probably not, but Kyle's fine.
Well, thanks for coming on, Chief Kyle Whitehead, St. George Police Department. Love the website. He's all gussied up in his suit and tie and everything on the website. What are they, dress formals or whatever they call them?
Our Class A uniforms.
Class A. There we go, the Class A's. So you look good. But I did want to – let's do this first, then we'll do Spear Academy maybe as we get closer to the about quarter two or something. Okay, so this happened Saturday night. UHP, and again, this is out of your jurisdiction, so I feel like you can at least offer some opinion on it, although you maybe won't know all the facts. But UHP pulled over a car. In the car was a man, a 46-year-old John Hampton, and 41-year-old John Hampton, 26-year-old Barbara Singleton. And in the back seat was a juvenile, a 15-year-old girl. When they pulled him over, things didn't quite jive. The girl didn't really say anything, but things didn't quite jive. So the police got the girl apart from them and said that she wasn't really there by her own volition or what. I don't know. Anyway, they got permission from them to look at their phones, Hampton and Singleton people, and they had talked about how much money they could make by this girl turning tricks. That was the verbiage they used. They also found clothing that they said resembled that of a prostitute, along with marijuana, ecstasy, and brass knuckles in the vehicle. They are currently in jail, Singleton and Hampton. I think a lot of us, Chief, we go, child trafficking, it's a movie thing. It's maybe a big city thing. Maybe it's a South America or Mexico thing. That doesn't happen here, right?
Not necessarily.
That's what we think.
Yeah, I know. And that's what we hope. We want the community to believe that it's not a problem here. And as far as being a huge problem, I guess that would be what, you know, the question is, what's your definition of a huge problem? I guess even one is a huge problem, right? But we have seen these over the years since I've been the chief. And even prior to me being the chief, we have a multi-jurisdictional task force that focuses on drugs here. There's another unit within our task force, though. It's called the Focused Operations Group. And they deal with our gang issues. They deal with prostitution issues, to include our human trafficking. And we have had found people under 18 that have been trafficked to St. George for sex acts.
Wow.
And it's unfortunate, probably because we live so close to Las Vegas. It's a very, because it goes on in Vegas a lot, right?
Right.
And, but we unfortunately will see that from time to time. We always try and take those youth, and even though oftentimes we'll catch them in the act, you know, we'll do it through sting operations and different things. But we always take the approach that they are victims, even though they're committing the crimes, and we go after the adults that are the perpetrators. And so, you know, sometimes we're able to get them out of that situation and get them help and get them back with family. Oftentimes we find they're runaways and they've got a bad home life.
That's actually what I was going to ask. Do you find a lot of them are runaways, or I mean, are they kidnapping these kids?
So we haven't here, to my, as I'm thinking back even over the last decade, I can't think of any situations where they've been kidnapped. Okay. Now, what happens sometimes is they'll get them all hooked on drugs, and they'll get them drug addicted, right? Mm. And now that is their, as long as you stay with me, I'll keep you, you know, keep you on your medicine and doing those types of things.
Right.
And so as far as the actual kidnappings, knock on wood, we haven't seen a lot of those. And so, but it doesn't mean we should turn a blind eye or just be happy thinking we're not ever going to see that problem here.
Now, you know, there are places you go, big cities especially, where you would not want a woman walking after dark by herself. Is St. George, are we to that point yet? Is that, should we not have our wives, our daughters walking around after dark in St. George?
So I get this question a lot, oftentimes by people who are moving to the area or maybe considering moving. Hey, what parts of town should I avoid? Where should I live? Where shouldn't I live? And I tell them, look, there are really no parts of St. George that you have to be on your guard. Now, I tell anybody that's going to be out after dark, right? There should be at least a couple of you. Don't put yourself in bad situations. Society's changing. I mean, we see little communities across the country where horrible, horrible things happen and are committed against men and women, you know, during the hours of darkness. And so I always encourage people, look, don't feel like you St. George is safe. There really isn't an unsafe part of the city. But don't put yourself in a bad situation. You know, always have somebody with you. If you have a dog, walk the dog with you, or, you know, do it in more, on more public roadways or those types of things. But as far as, you know, if it were me, even in a very affluent neighborhood, I would not, if there was a bike path, say along the river that passed an affluent neighborhood, I would be hesitant to allow my young daughters or my wife by themselves to go walk that path in the dark, because I mean, who knows what could be lurking in the shadows.
Years ago I was going to BYU, and at the time there was they called him a serial rapist. There was a guy jumping out of the bushes and attacking women joggers in Provo, Utah. And it was like, well, Provo, that's like BYU, that's like super safe. I'm like, well, you know what, maybe, but you had these girls who felt like, I'm invincible because I'm in Provo, Utah. I can go jogging at 10 o'clock at night or at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'm safe. And they weren't. They found out the hard way.
Yeah, and I don't think it's even that people think they're invincible. I just think sometimes we get so used to the status quo. You know, look, thinking back about this community, people still leave their cars unlocked. We get calls on Sundays when, you know, people may go to a religious institution. Oh, someone came in my house while I was at church and took my stuff.
Yeah.
That again is just that mentality of it's still a small town, and we have to sometimes think about taking those extra precautions.
I know you've had detectives on, and one of the things they seems like they get complaints about all the time are people go on a hike. You're gone for an hour, 2 hours, whatever, hiking. You leave your car unlocked. You leave your purse sitting on the front seat, even if the car's locked.
Leave it out in the open where people can see it, and it's just inviting problems. You know, you mentioned something. We're seeing a huge increase in our area are these transnational gangs.
Yeah.
Not that they're violent, but they come through and they're stealing out of stores. They're committing vehicle burglaries. You know, the other day I read an article now that there's some new technique about stealing money out of ATMs even. And so groups will come through and they're getting training outside of the U.S. Their main group is outside of the U.S., but then they get these people in here and they commit these crimes. And sometimes they're even recruiting people that are in the U.S. So
Yeah, and then you can't deport them if they're Americans already.
Yeah, that's a whole nother issue.
Well, and that's, you know, that was kind of what the other big news story the last few weeks was, that raid in Washington City. And again, this is not in your jurisdiction, but you had, I think Homeland Security was there, ICE was there, Washington City Police were there, and not everyone in the house was an illegal immigrant or even a criminal, but a lot of them were. Have you had situations like that where the big boys have come, the feds have come and said, hey, we want to work with you because we're going to do this?
Well, we have federal partners here in St. George. We've had partnerships with them for decades. In fact, as long as I've been a police officer, we've had the FBI, the DEA, and we partner with all of the feds on different task forces. Mm-hmm. We have several of our detectives who work with the feds on cases. And so it's not, we really don't see it so much as, we're the feds, we're going to come in here, can you help us on this? So we coordinate weekly oftentimes in meetings and talking about things, and we're all part of the same law enforcement family. We're here to help. Now, there are some things that we don't get into, maybe things that are more administrative, and frankly, we don't have the time. Immigration is one of those topics I get a lot of questions about. Yeah. Our officers aren't out on the street enforcing immigration. We have plenty of other issues, and I'm not minimizing the importance of immigration, but there are a whole other set of rules. A lot of them are administrative that we just would have to provide more training to our officers, which it's already difficult enough to provide the training that we have. And so typically from our department, when we see a person, we address the crime issue. If they've committed a crime, and then we take them and we book them in jail. Then once they're in jail, that's where the sheriff's office in the past has had deputies there that can ask the questions and then figure out, and they deal with all the immigration once they get to the jail. But we want people to have confidence in the police department, regardless of who you are or where you're from, that if they're a victim of a crime, that they can call and we're going to help them.
You are not arresting people simply because of the color of their skin or anything like that.
Yeah, that's the real problem you get sometimes is, you know, just because someone speaks a certain language or they look a certain way, and we get some people are like, you should go raid that business. Yeah. And my question is always, well, how do you know that people, you know, what their status is? It's just difficult. And we could go on for days and probably debate this, but we have to try and remain neutral as a police department.
Well, you know, and there was a story last week about, you know, some neighbors were complaining to the police that, well, there's got to be something bad going on in that house. There's a lot of cars there, or there's people going in and out. And the police basically had to tell them, unless you witnessed a crime, we can't do anything about that because they haven't done anything illegal as far as we can tell. I know that maybe can make a neighbor frustrated. Oh, I've been, you know, this thing, you got to get them, but that's the law, right?
Yeah, we certainly have to address criminal behavior. We can't go off of hunches or suspicions. Now, those can certainly help us maybe focus a little bit more. If there's a house that there's a lot of traffic in and out,
right.
Maybe we'll set up one of our drug officers to set up surveillance and kind of watch and start seeing if he recognizes anybody who frequents the drug trade. Maybe it's traffic stops, right? When car leaves the house, you find a reason to stop the car, traffic violation or some other, and now you have a canine sniff the car, you find drugs, it may tie it back to that house. So there are ways that we can go about these investigations. Oftentimes it's not just we can't do anything, but sometimes it takes some time and patience.
All right, let's get one more commercial break in. When we come back, we want to talk about the Spear Academy here with Chief Kyle Whitehead.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy. He's Chief Kyle Whitehead, St. George Police Department. 5 years now. Wow.
Time flies when you're having fun, right?
That's awesome. Now, retirement for police officers is 25 years now?
Those of us in the Tier 1, so that changed in 2011. So anybody hired before 2011, you're in Tier 1, so 20 years.
20 years.
Yes. Okay.
And you've got to be there.
Yeah? Oh, yeah. I'm past it.
Past it. And
but if I retired, I'd just have to find another job. I'm still young.
You're a young guy. Family. Yeah, that's kind of where my wife's at. She's got her 30 in.
Wow.
Working for the state, actually the city. But she could retire any time, but she's like, well, I'm only, you know, she's in her 50s. She's like, well, I'm not going to just stay home. I got to do something.
Right.
So you got to figure that out. So you think it'll be on a while still, Kyle?
It depends.
I
feel like as long as I'm still feel like I'm being a positive influence in the department, that I'm taking it in a positive direction. Look, I've got great people, and there are great people that I work with, and if I were to leave, there would be several great people that could step in and take my place.
So,
and
do you still have? Does the chief have to pass a physical test?
Yes.
Yeah,
I still have to go through firearms, defensive tactics. Nice. I just did my physical test last week.
Really?
And passed.
So yay!
I'm good for another 6 months. We test every 6 months. So,
and you're how old now?
48.
And you're still getting it done, huh?
Well, that's not that old. I mean, I hope in
my
50s, I might be asking for...
When you were 28, that test was a piece of cake, right? But at 48, not as much, right?
Our test now, honestly, our test encourages people to be fit, but it's really not super difficult.
You don't have to carry a body up four flights of stairs like the old days.
Not that kind of crazy. Nope.
All right, let's take a couple minutes and talk about the Spear Academy. St. George Police Department school resource officers are excited to hold the free Spear Academy for Washington County School District students entering 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th grades. So 10th grade up, no. Under 6th grade, no. But 6, 7, 8, 9, yes. And tell us what that is.
So the Spear Academy actually was an idea that was pitched. I think this is our third or fourth year. Anyway, our school resource officers during the summer, typically they go out and just work other assignments in the department. But the idea came up about they see a challenge sometimes as kids go from elementary to intermediate.
It's a challenging transition.
It is. Yeah. I've had two kids that have gone through it already, and my third one is transitioning this year. Mm-hmm. And it's tough. And then also, again, that transition from intermediate to middle school was another area that our SROs feel like sometimes kids just could use some help. And so what they do is they pull them in for a week, and it's a week at a time, and they just do activities with the kids. They talk about policing, they talk about life skills and bullying and including other. I mean, they do a lot of different things. We also partner with some other community partners, the Southwest Center. We actually don't pay for this out of our budget. We get a grant for it. Mm-hmm. And so we have community partners that come in and donate, and that's why we're able to offer it for free. But it's just a great opportunity for the kids to have a good experience with the police department, learn about different life skills and different things. And then sometimes it gets them out of their parents' hair for a little bit during the summer.
So what's the format like? And by the way, we're not giving a date because it actually runs for like a month, right? At several different locations?
Yeah, so you can go to our social media and find it. You can also go, I think it's the city's recreation page sign up for it. And it gives different dates and those types of things. But the format is there's some classroom and some discussion, but there's a lot of activities, some hands-on.
So is it like all day for several days in a row? Or
I know it's changed a little bit. I think it's... They do it for like 2 to 4 hours for a week.
Okay.
And so it's not like super intensive, but again, it's an opportunity to just learn about the department. Because again, we hope maybe we can get some good recruiting in there, even at that age, for kids to start thinking about our police department. And then we have a lot of different opportunities in there.
Right.
And even government generally, how good it can be. And St. George is just a great place. We want all of our young people to stay here and contribute to our community.
Were you, Kyle, one of those kids in fifth grade or seventh grade or whatever? Like, I want to be a cop. I want to be a police officer.
I was.
Are you?
My story is a little bit unique, though. I think back when I was growing up, it seems like we all kind of went through a cop or fireman phase, right?
Yeah, sure.
My grandfather, he was the sheriff here in Washington County in the 60s and 70s. And I remember growing up, he'd retired by the time I was old enough to remember, but just the stories and the experiences he had.
Yeah.
And man, I just felt like that would be something that would be very good to be able to give back to the community. And so even through high school, all of my friends, kind of gave me a hard time and they knew that's what I was going to do. I was going to go into policing. There was a little, there was a just a brief time after when I got into my 20s that I thought maybe it wouldn't be good. Because you always hear the horror stories, right? Divorce rates high, it's infidelity, so yeah, kids, well. Everybody knows cops, a cop's kid, and they're kind of rambunctious, and I didn't want to have rambunctious kids, you know? So you go through all that, but no, I stayed with it, and yeah, it's been a great career.
Yeah, and here you go. So the for me, it was... There was a policeman, a fireman, or I wanted to be the quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. Obviously, uh-huh. That didn't work out so well for me. But I, too, I always had radio was kind of my, when I knew I wasn't good enough of an athlete to be a professional athlete, I was like, okay, I still want to be close to
talk athletics. About it.
And so I talked about it. So I've been doing games on there. I've been lucky to do games on the radio here for 31 years. What high school did you go to?
Pineview.
Were you an athlete? Did you play sports?
No, I didn't play sports.
Okay. All right.
No, I regret it. There was...
You probably could have been, right? You're an athletic guy.
Yeah,
you just passed PT at 8:48, man.
I probably would have been on like a third string of whatever, but...
Yeah, I was, it's an interesting thing, athletics. But the one thing I like about athletics that these kids are, it used to be the football players with the dumb guy, oh, you're a dumb football player. Now you've got, not all of them, but a lot of the athletes are guys that are good students that learn how to set goals early on, learn how to work with the team, and they're really good guys. So, I think athletics has really turned the corner for a lot of people's lives.
Yeah,
so.
I think that's great. But, yeah, Spear Academy, if anybody out there has youth that are those ages, 6th through 9th grade, I think it is, or 8th grade,
yeah,
sorry.
9th, yeah.
Enroll. We would love to be able to do it. Typically, we give first priority to those that live within St. George, but even if you live in one of our neighboring cities, we would encourage, because a lot of those students also enroll or are in our boundaries when it comes to the school year, and so we want to offer that to anybody.
Always fascinated me. So Crimson Cliffs is technically in Washington City. Most of their students are St. George City residents. Pineview is technically in St. George City. Most of their students, though, come from Washington City.
I live in an area where the boundary changed this year, and so we went from Crimson to Pineview.
Okay.
So in my neighborhood, it was a little bit of a controversial topic, but I've had my kids, even though they're Crimson students, I still have them attend one of the Spear Academies because I just think it's good.
Really neat thing. You know, we talked about, we only have 2 minutes left now, but the relationship, a lot of times, especially kids who maybe have a troubled home life, the only time they ever see police officers is when they're called to a home in a negative situation. So, you have the shop with the cop and you have all these different roles with patrol and things, but to have these young people interact with police in a positive setting where there's not, stress and anger and laws, just to have them interact, it's got to be huge.
Yeah, it really has been such a blessing to have our, not just us, the Spear Academy, but our school resource officers. They do such great work, and mentors is the way I like to think of them. We call them school resource officers. We could probably come up with a better name because they are just that, as mentors. And we encourage that of all of our officers. When they're out during the summer, they see kids, take an opportunity to engage with them in a positive way. So that the first opportunity they have to meet a police officer is not when there's something negative going on.
Right. Good point. Love our SROs. I know that you guys provide officers for pretty much every high school and middle school in the area, with exceptions of ones that are in Washington City.
Yeah,
right?
So any high school, intermediate school, or middle school in St. George city limits, there will be a St. George school resource officer at that school.
Do you know how many SROs there are?
We have 11 or 12.
Wow.
The last one we added was the Career Tech down on the south end.
Yeah.
So
I think, I don't know, I don't want to speak for you, but for me, it's like there are certain jobs I couldn't do. Not that I couldn't do them, I could if I had to, but are a little bit, they require a certain type of personality to be a school teacher, to be an SRO.
Yeah, I'll tell you, we have a lot of senior officers in our SROs. They really seem to enjoy that assignment.
Nice. Well, we've used it up. Can you believe it?
Another great time. Thanks, Andy.
Chief Kyle Whitehead, St. George Police Department. Chief, thanks for coming in. It's always a pleasure.
My pleasure.
We'll be back tomorrow. I believe we have Zach Renstrom on the show tomorrow, and we need to talk about water, don't we? We'll talk to you then, folks. Thanks for listening.